What's one of the most consequential decisions a church leader will ever make? Not the next sermon series, not the worship set, not the program to launch, or the facility to acquire. The most common.
You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. Welcome back to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter, alongside Charles Russell, my esteemed co-host. And this is season three. We're on to episode 32. And today we're talking about building the leadership pipeline. And we want to get around ideas related to finding, forming, and releasing the right people within your servant leadership team in your church. So we want to welcome you. We're glad that you can be with us. Charles, you and I have had busy weekends. So why don't you greet everyone and tell us about your weekend?
Yeah, well, it was great to have you, everyone here with us on the podcast today. Thanks for tuning in. It's been a whirlwind of a weekend for the Russell family, for sure. Got two daughters in college. One's graduating this semester. One is beginning her first semester. Just started this. We just got her moved in this weekend. And so Mama and I are licking our wounds. We drove all the way back yesterday from Florida.
Oh my goodness.
Fighting the tears and consoling one another. So here we are, excited for her, for our youngest daughter. She graduated high school a year early. So this was kind of a unplanned deal. We thought we had her for at least another year. But she's beginning school, and we're excited for her. And so she is spreading her wings and navigating the ups and downs of this newfound independence. And so pray for us. Pray for Juliana and myself. We're navigating some transition too. But it's a good one. All in all, we're really excited and really, really thrilled for our family and what God's doing in our family through our family, for sure. Well, Bruce, you had a phenomenal weekend. You told me about all the wonderful cuisine you enjoyed, and so I'm a little bit hungry over here. But fill us in, man. What all did you do this weekend?
Well, we were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. My wife and I, we were ministering with a beautiful Hispanic congregation in Garland, Texas, Iglesia Cristiana Vida y Luz a las Naciones. What a beautiful people, and a wonderful pastor Salvatiel Ramirez. Shout out to his leadership, his deacons, Pastor Jose, Gustavo, so many that were just such wonderful hosts. And we had a chance to do a lot of things. Charles, we ministered and taught their leadership team on Friday night, and then my wife and I did a one day wedding, a marriage conference with their married couples, and then Sunday preached in their Sunday morning service. Just blessed to be part of that, and such a beautiful response with God's people. The Lord just showered His love on that congregation that weekend, and not because Mary and I were there, maybe in spite of us, but there was tremendous ministry that took place. And so I love that congregation, and hope we can go back sometime, because it was fantastic. You know, one of the most persistent mistakes that churches can make has to do with leadership development. And I was thinking about the intentionality of Iglesia Cristiana. They're so intentional about investing in their leaders. But sometimes churches can make some rather, persistent mistakes by when it comes to vacancies, because that's like the urgent need in the moment. We need a children's ministries director. We've got to have a nursery coordinator. We need small group leaders, especially in growth mode in your church. If you're falling behind on small group leaders, you feel the impact of that urgency. And so we need someone to oversee areas of ministry, and we tend to look around and ask who can fill the position. And again, it's the urgency of the need that tends to drive the decision rather than maybe some other more, much more important factors. And we often end up with gifted people, even gifted, strongly gifted people, but in the wrong roles. And then there's also the scenario where you find willing people who are not ready because the starting point was the position rather than the person. And again, that's driven by need.
Yeah, absolutely. You're spot on with that. And Ephesians 4, really, it describes a different model entirely than what we're typically used to, at least in the American church. And so the five gifts were given to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. That means, the work of the ministry is supposed to be distributed through the whole body, not just concentrated in a small number of paid or prominent leaders. Healthy leadership development in the fivefold framework, it's not about just filling holes. It is all about building a pipeline, that continuous, intentional process through which people are identified, they're formed, deployed, and then developed into people who develop others.
Charles, what a great point about fivefold ministry. And boy, it's some of the stuff that's come out recently that's been attached to fivefold ministry, it just sickens me. And it's good medicine for me to come back to our discussions, because I think we put fivefold ministry in a much different light, in a much more biblical light, in a much more healthy light. And because it's not about titles and positions and top-down leadership, it's not. It's about bringing our leadership under Christ. And so today, we want to cover the full arc of that pipeline, of the foundational behaviors that establish readiness for leadership development. And so there are about four questions that help discern whether someone is suited for a specific role. And we want to talk about how each of the five gifts contribute a specific dimension to the health of that pipeline.
Yeah, and before we get into our discussion about the pipeline structure, I think we need to really address the most foundational principle. And it's the one that every other element of the conversation depends on. Leadership selection begins with the person and not the position.
Say that again. Say, Charles, you got to say that again. And say it again like 10 or 11 times.
All right. Leadership selection begins with the person, not the position. And so I'm going to say it once more for emphasis. Here we go. Leadership selection begins with the person, not the position. So look, a person's spiritual gift answers the question, what has God empowered me to do? But qualification answers a much different question. It answers the question that says, who am I becoming? And those are not the same questions at all. And the leadership crisis in many churches and ministry organizations is rooted precisely in the confusion between them. In treating giftedness as the primary criterion for leadership readiness, when character is the actual foundation. So look, Jesus, he didn't recruit the most impressive people, but he did develop people with potential who entered a process. The disciples weren't finished products when he called them. They were fishermen, they were tax collectors, political zealots. They were people with raw material that required years of formation before they were ever ready to bear the weight of what was being entrusted to them. And the investment that Jesus made in that formation, the daily proximity, the teaching, his correction, the modeling, the sending out and then bringing back and reflecting. It's that's what produced the leaders who built the early church. And each fivefold gift asked a very specific developmental question about the people around it. And so the apostolic leader asked, can I build this person? The prophetic leader asked, can I help this person learn to hear and respond to God? The evangelistic leader asked, can I mobilize this person toward genuine missional engagement? And the pastoral leader asked, can I shepherd this person's formation? The teaching leader asked, can I help this person understand and apply truth in a way that genuinely changes how they live? And so, you know, these questions, what they do for us is they reframe the entire enterprise of leadership selection. So now the five gifts are not simply five functions to be executed. They're five dimensions of an equipping relationship. There are five ways that a developing leader can be brought further along in their formation.
Wow, that's rich. Such really good content. And I think, again, we want to say, right, the starting point is the person rather than the position. And if that's true, then the question of how we identify the right people becomes crucial. And the answer is more relational, I think, than most selection processes tend to reflect. So we like to say, make sure that you're recruiting through personal invitation. This is pretty significant, Charles, and I know you have some thoughts on this, but when we embed this biblical pattern of leadership recruitment, it is the most effective approach. It's much better than the general announcement. It's much better than the old printed bulletin or the slide before the service, or even worse, a social media post. An announcement communicates that a vacancy exists and invites whoever might be interested to apply, but a personal invitation travels along the lines of relationship. It communicates something entirely different. It says some things to the person you're asking. First of all, it says, listen, I've been paying attention. I've been watching you. I see some things in you, and I believe that God may have something for you through this. I see some things in you where what God is doing in your life can bring value to what we do. And remember, Jesus said, follow me. If you'll come after me, that's his invitation. But he says it to specific people in very specific moments and with specific relational intent. Paul told Timothy to entrust the truth to faithful people who would be faithful to teach others also. And that recruitment is relational. It's discerning. It's rooted in observation over time rather than in the urgency of the need. And I would say this, the people that you invite are probably people that you yourself would recognize their credibility. I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying they don't have rough edges, but you see more than their potential. You see their potential to commit. And so I think the implication in fivefold leadership is that genuine recruitment requires genuine watching. Before you invite someone, you've been paying attention to their character under pressure, to their faithfulness in the things that maybe no one else is even applauding. It's to how they treat people. Man, that's a huge one for me. I want to know how you treat other people when there's nothing to be gained from treating them well. We want to see how they respond to correction and to difficulty. You know, Charles, the classic resume is what elevates a person's profile. We hope it does, you know, in a selection process. Listen, when you're recruiting for ministry, you're not recruiting a resume. You're recognizing a life that's been demonstrating the qualities that make genuine development possible.
Yeah, Bruce, you're on to something that's powerful and can save a lot of train wrecks for a lot of leaders if we'll heed what you're saying. I'm just thinking, reflecting over my leadership history. And when you said that about recruiting through bulletin announcements, it brought back a lot of pain and a lot of misery in my life. Some of the worst and biggest mistakes I've made in recruiting leaders have come through that bulletin announcement, and it really created a lot of heartache for me. When you're teaching us to recruit privately, recruit personally, and I think that's so important. And when I began to learn about that and really began to practice what you're saying, it really made a huge difference. It shifted the effectiveness of my leadership just through this one intentional behavior of recruiting people personally, going to them privately, going to them personally, the people that we've been building relationship with. And so, man, I'm telling you, it can revolutionize, and it will revolutionize the effectiveness of your recruiting and placing and developing leaders and future leaders in the ministries that you're leading. So, what all this means is the identification of potential leaders it's not a process that begins when a position opens. This is a continuous practice. It's the ongoing discipline of paying attention to the people in your community with eyes trained to see what giftedness, character, and faithfulness can look like in their early and often unpolished forms. The desperate recruitment, the invitation that's extended because we've got to have someone to fill a role by Sunday, or the world is going to come to an end, you know. And it almost always produces worse outcomes than patient, discerning recruitment that's built on sustained observation. Look, the urgency of the organizational need, that's a poor criterion for leadership selection. What we're looking for is not the person who can help us this weekend. We're looking for the person God is already developing, whose formation has been demonstrating the qualities that will make genuine leadership possible over time. So don't recruit because you're desperate. Recruit because you've been watching, and what you've been what you've seen warrants an invitation. So I'm just telling you, someone right now you've been contemplating making that social media post, making the open general invitation to come and come help us lead. Don't do it. Walk away. Put the post down. Turn and go. Repent and go in the opposite direction right now. Don't do it. Listen to the bald and the beautiful today on the Five Gifts podcast. Step away from your social media posts.
Stop typing.
That's right.
Charles, would it be too strong for me to make this observation? If that's your approach to, if you're going to just put out blanket appeals, is it too strong for me to say you're opening the door to the freaks? That might be a little too strong, but you got to know something.
I don't think it's too strong, but Bruce is the one that said that. So that's Bruce at fivegifts.
.com.
Yeah,
not...
yeah. .com.
Yeah. No, but my point is that, listen, we live in an age where, you know, we have to protect the work of God. We have to be shepherds that are mindful that, listen, if I'm inviting you into a position of ministry, I'm inviting you to care for people. I'm inviting you to make sure that you're elevating people and not putting you in a position, if you're not ready, to wound people. And mm-hmm. and two, man, believe me, there are people that they're wolves and they're looking for opportunities to have influence for the wrong reasons. And I think that's just good. That's a good practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so look, personal invitation, what it does, it opens a door into a developmental process. But entering that door it's not automatic. It requires a period of demonstrated readiness that it establishes the foundation for everything that follows. And so we're going to call this foundation the Super Six, all right? The Super Six. These are six foundational behaviors. They're not a checklist for spiritual perfection. It's not a white glove test by any means. These are six behavioral commitments that, when practiced over a designated period, we're talking typically six months, 8 months, even a year. These behaviors establish a foundation of character and consistency that genuine leadership development requires. They're the conditions under which the formation work of the leadership pipeline can actually take hold. The first is a commitment to serve in a consistent church role for a designated period. Not to hold a position, to serve, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Before we invite someone into leadership over people, we want to see whether they can serve people. So faithfulness and service, that's the basic criterion from which everything else is built. A person who serves consistently when no one's watching, in a role that carries no title or generates no recognition, look, they've demonstrated something about their character that a more impressive candidate who's not served in that way has not. So a commitment to serve in a consistent church role for a designated period. Second commitment is this. It's a commitment to private devotional practice 5 out of 7 days each week. And then also to pray with the leadership of the church weekly during the designated period. And so what this does is it establishes both the vertical and corporate dimensions of spiritual life. Well, we're not trying to manufacture religious activity, but what we are doing is looking for evidence that the person is genuinely abiding in Christ and genuinely engaged in shared dependence with the body. These are the conditions in which formation really begins to happen.
And Charles, those first two are so critical. I don't think that you go very far into this Super Six without really making sure that you nail down those first two and what you're looking for in servant leaders. I would say a third commitment, though, is participation in an accountable ministry team relationship during that designated period. And I think that's probably maybe the most revealing of the six, because leadership without accountability eventually can become dangerous, regardless of how gifted a person is. It just makes me think. I think football is the ultimate team sport, and I played for a long time, and I saw some super talented people. They had all kinds of potential, but instead of keeping their assignment in a blocking scheme or a run play or a defensive call on the field, they would freelance. They would do their own thing, and it put the team in jeopardy. And so you want accountability, because and we'll talk more about this, I think, maybe our next episode. We're going to talk about what it means to build teams, and if you can't nail this down, then you're going to hurt the overall team. And so we want people that are ready to make a commitment to accountability, to working with other people. What we're reassessing here is not simply whether someone will accept accountability, but how will they respond to it? Can they receive negative correction without becoming defensive? Can they tell the truth about their own struggles? Can they honor their commitments made to specific people? Can they navigate disagreement without withdrawing or retaliating? I think sometimes I know as a leader, if I'm asking someone to do something, even making the personal invitation like we've talked about, I don't want to communicate to them that I want them to do this for me. I want them to make sure that they can work with a team. And so I think it's important that we make that clear that you're going to work with some specific people. You're going to have to deal with disagreement and conflict without withdrawing or retaliating or manipulating. Giftedness doesn't exempt anyone from community. In fact, giftedness flows best in community. And this is the commitment that really makes that concrete. A fourth commitment is a commitment to intentional growth as a disciple, especially during that designated period. We're not simply forming ministry workers, are we? We're forming disciples. We're forming people to not just be a better elementary age kids teacher. We want to form disciples. And so the fundamental question is whether someone can perform a ministry function, or rather it's not whether they can perform a ministry function, it's whether they're becoming more like Jesus. Leadership development that's not rooted in discipleship development, you're going to find that produces increasingly capable but increasingly hollow leaders over time. A fourth commitment is perhaps the most distinctive, and that's asking the Holy Spirit to identify four people outside the faith who that person can intentionally influence toward Christ and the church during that designated period. So this is a requirement that does two things simultaneously, and I think this is genius. It ensures that people entering their leadership pipeline are engaged with the mission rather than entirely focused on the internal life of the community. It also develops the evangelistic dimension of the character. The genuine love for people who don't yet know Christ, that's got to mark every leader in a genuinely fivefold functioning church. Now, the sixth commitment is something I say, don't compromise on this at all. Make sure that the sixth commitment that you're asking people to do is to be a faithful steward, to be faithful in giving of their tithes, their offerings to the local church during the designated period. This is not primarily about the organization's finances as much as it is about the faithfulness of stewardship with money that Jesus talks about in Luke 16. How we handle what we have, I think that's one of the most reliable indicators of how we will handle greater responsibility. And so before we entrust someone with stewarding God's people, we want to see evidence of faithful stewardship in the smaller, even the more tangible domain of finances. So, Charles, the Super Six, I think they established some foundational readiness for people that we're looking to become potential leaders. But once someone has demonstrated that readiness, I think there's still a layer of discernment that helps determine whether a person is suited for a specific role at a specific time. So these are four questions I think need to be considered before placing someone in a servant leadership role. The first question, I think, is to ask whether the person genuinely understands what's being asked of them. Now, I know that sounds basic, and it can be easily overlooked, but before we evaluate someone's performance in a role, we need to be confident that the expectations were communicated on our part with sufficient clarity so that the person that we're approaching, that we're inviting into this new role, this new service within the church, that we want to know that they actually know what they're being asked to do. There are many situations that look like a lack of commitment or poor execution, and the truth is that we didn't communicate what was needed up front. That's on us. And so understanding can precede execution, and ensuring understanding is the leader's responsibility. The second question is whether the person has the capacity for the role in their development. Now, again, capacity includes time. It takes emotional bandwidth. That it requires not just relevant skills, but the relational capacity and a leadership capacity. Now, listen, not everyone in your congregation is cut out to lead people. They're tremendous. They're faithful when it comes to serving in the ministries of the church. But when it comes, we're talking about leadership here. And a person can have all the time and skill a role requires, but if they lack the relational capacity to navigate the different complexities of the team, of just what it means to be human, that can present problems. A person can have the relational capacity and lack those organizational skills. And so assessing capacity honestly and communicating what you find with genuine pastoral care, I think that's one of the most important acts of service that you as a fivefold leader can perform for developing leaders. Now, it's not a bad thing to say not yet. Again, not yet is not rejection. It's just the honest, and believe me, honesty and clarity are two things that you want in your communication. And what we're talking about here, if we have to say to a person, all right, not yet. We see potential in you, but you're not quite ready for this. Continue serving faithfully in what you're doing and keep growing. And that not yet will soon become, all right, let's thumbs up, let's go. And I think that's the honest guidance of someone who is really paying attention as a leader.
Absolutely. And so, two great questions, Bruce. You set it off really, really well, and it moves us into the third question. We need to talk about it. And the third question is whether the person genuinely wants the responsibility. And this is less obvious than it appears, because people will sometimes accept leadership roles out of a desire to please the leader who invited them, or maybe even out of a general sense that, I should be more involved, without having a genuine desire for the specific responsibility. Calling involves desire, but the person who's genuinely called to a role will feel something like a pull toward it. Not the absence of fear or the absence of uncertainty, but a genuine orientation of a heart toward the work. And it's worth asking directly and waiting for a genuine answer rather than accepting a polite affirmation as confirmation. So we want to make sure the person genuinely wants the responsibility. A fourth question we need to consider and discuss through is this, and I want us to notice where it falls in the sequence. We need to ask the question is whether the person is spiritually gifted for the role. Now, giftedness absolutely matters. It belongs in this discernment process for sure, but it comes after understanding, after capacity, after genuine desire, and after the foundational character and commitment demonstrated through the Super Six. Look, the sequence is intentional here. When giftedness is treated as the primary criterion, then we end up with gifted people in roles they're not ready for. They're carrying responsibilities, their character and formation just cannot yet sustain. But when it's treated as one important factor among several, properly ordered, then we make better decisions and we serve the developing leader more faithfully. So hopefully those four questions really bring more clarity and bring greater definition to the burgeoning leaders that you're recruiting and that you're helping to develop in your leadership pipeline. So, excuse me, with the person identified now and the role is discerned, the pipeline structure gives us a clear framework for the development process itself. And so the pipeline has six stages we're going to talk about. And each of these builds on the one before. The first is seeing. This is the ongoing disciplined practice of watching the people in your community for the specific qualities that leadership development requires. Faithfulness in small things, initiative taken without being asked, genuine influence in the lives of others, spiritual hunger that's not contingent on the visibility of the role. What you're looking for people, you're looking for who people already are, not who they might become if the right opportunity is presented. So that's number one. That's the first stage. Second stage is inviting. This is the personal, relational, specific invitation that communicates genuine observation and genuine belief in the person's potential. So the second stage, inviting. Third stage is qualifying. We're talking about working through the Super Six commitment period and the four discernment questions to assess whether the person is ready for the specific developmental process and the role that's being considered. The fourth stage is developing. This is the sustained investment in the person's formation through mentoring, through training, through accountability, ministry experience, and coaching. This is a stage that most organizations compress or maybe even skip over entirely when the urgency of filling roles creates pressure to move from invitation directly to deployment. And let me tell you, friends, the compression is costly. Formation that happens in genuine development is what makes deployment fruitful rather than just merely busy.
Yeah, but Charles, I think you're bringing this up to the next stage in the leadership pipeline, and that would be deployment. That's where we place the person on in the right ministry environment for this particular season in their development. It's not simply the most available position and not the position they will eventually occupy. The right role for who they are now with the appropriate support and oversight that, you know, allows them to grow through the experience rather than simply performing in it. And then the sixth stage is multiplication. This is the exciting part. That's the development of others by the person who's been developed. Now, this is where Ephesians 4 becomes fully visible in the life of an individual leader. The apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, pastoral, and teaching leader who's functioning as a genuine equipper is not primarily producing ministry, they're producing ministers. The measure of their leadership effectiveness is not what they have built, but it's who they developed. And specifically, whether the people they have developed are now developing others. Paul's instruction to Timothy, I think, captures the whole pipeline in a single sentence. He said, "The things that you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, now entrust to faithful people who will be able to teach others the same thing." And so you have four generations in one sentence. You have Paul, you have Timothy, faithful people, and then the others that the faithful people are in fact developing. And that is the multiplying pipeline at its clearest. Now, I just want to summarize a couple of things that we've said this in this episode. I know that the urgency is saying, this is great, this is wonderful, but I need like someone yesterday for junior high boys. If we don't fill the junior high boys teaching class, our church is going to go under. Comets are going to rain from the heavens and wipe us out. And I just want to tell you, first of all, that's probably not going to happen. It could, but it's probably not going to happen. And number two, if you will take time to build this process, you will be blown away by the capacity your church now has to develop leaders in a timely fashion and serve all the ministries that the church has and the mission for which it exists, if you'll take time to build this kind of culture in your church. It needs to start with you, but imagine, Charles, I know this is going off in your head too. I know how you and I think about this, but if you'll begin to develop this process yourself as a leader, and then build the culture of this kind of leadership development in your church, you're actually going to empower your worship leader, your worship director, your worship pastor to do what you do when it comes to building that missional area of your church. You're going to do the same thing when it comes to small groups or Sunday school or kids ministry. And you're going to do the same thing when it comes to the missional component of outreach in your church. If you'll teach your evangelistic director to take this approach to getting people into the leadership pipeline. I know, Charles, this is going to dovetail with what we talk about a lot next week, but this is the way you do more than build programs. This is the way you build capable teams. And this is the multiplying pipeline at its clearest. So I'm a little animated. I know we're running a little bit long today, but we just had to say some things that needed to be said. Remember, the five gifts, each of them bring a specific contribution to the health of the pipeline. Understanding those contributions helps teams, fivefold teams, work together on leadership development rather than each gift operating in isolation from the others. So quickly, let's talk about the five gifts in relation to the pipeline. Remember, the apostolic gift builds the pipeline itself. That's the system. That's creating the environments, the structures, the systems that make leadership multiplication sustainable rather than dependent on any single leader's capacity or presence. And so that apostolic leader is thinking about the next generation of leaders before the current generation is even fully emerged. You're building foundations that will bear the load of what is being developed on top of them. The prophetic gift ensures that people who are moving through the pipeline are genuinely aligned with God's purposes rather than simply with organizational goals. The prophet's paying attention to the condition of the heart underneath the performance, to the alignment between developing leader possesses and how they're actually living, and then to the gaps between the community stated values and its actual culture. And they bring the accountability of genuine spiritual discernment to a process that can otherwise become rather static and seemingly organizational. The evangelistic leader, that gift is keeping the pipeline outward facing. It's always saying, we exist for the harvest. And so if you don't have that contribution, leadership can become very, very internal very quickly. And so you want to make sure that the evangelistic gift is healthy and keeping that pipeline honest. Again, producing capable leaders who are skilled at serving people who are already inside while losing the missional orientation that defines the church's purpose. Again, the evangelistic leader is vital that every stage of the pipeline remains genuinely connected to the people, those lost sons and daughters of God that need to find pathways of connection in the local church.
Yeah, those are great examples, Bruce. And moving to the pastoral gift, this gift provides the relational care, accountability, and formation that makes the pipeline genuinely developmental rather than just simply programmatic. The pastoral leader pays attention to the whole person that's moving through the pipeline, not just their ministry competence, but their marriage, their family, their emotional health, spiritual vitality, their unaddressed wounds and unexamined blind spots. For the pastoral gift, you know, development that does not attend to the whole person produces leaders who are capable of ministry and become fragile everywhere else. The teaching gift provides the biblical theological framework that gives the pipeline its content and its coherence. The teaching leader ensures that developing leaders understand why it is they're doing what they're doing, that their ministry practice is grounded in genuine theological conviction rather than in habit or tradition, and that the formation they're receiving is genuinely shaping their understanding of God, of Scripture, and the nature of the work they've been called to. And so When all five gifts are contributing their distinct dimensions to the pipeline, something genuinely Ephesians 4 begins to emerge. Now a community in which every believer is being equipped for ministry, in which the saints are genuinely doing the work rather than watching it, and in which the whole body is growing into the maturity and unity that Paul describes as the goal. So let's go back to the question that we started with. Who belongs on your leadership team? And probably the more important question is, who is God already developing around you? Leadership pipelines, they don't begin with job descriptions and position announcements. They begin with eyes that are trained to see potential in its early and unpolished forms, and with leaders who are willing to invest in that potential before it's proven itself in a visible role. They begin with personal invitation, with patient qualification, sustained development, and the discipline of deploying people into roles that fit them rather than simply filling the next available position. So here's a concrete next step that we can all take together. Think of three people in your church or your organization who are demonstrating faithfulness, a spiritual hunger, genuine initiative, relational influence in the people around them. Don't give them a position just yet, but pray for them this week. Watch them with intentional attention. Consider whether the time has come to invite them into a personal conversation about what God might be developing in them.
Yeah, and the question worth carrying, I think, from this episode is one that applies regardless of whether you're in the pipeline, whether you're the leader building it or a developing leader somewhere within it. Ask yourself, who is God putting in front of me right now that I need to stop simply using as a volunteer and start intentionally developing as a leader? I think because the future of your ministry is not primarily determined by the clarity of your vision or the quality of your Sunday service, it is determined by who you're developing. It's who's being formed and equipped and released to form and equip others. That's the heart of the five servant gifts. We don't simply lead the church, we equip the church to lead. Matthew 9:38, I think, gives us a posture from which all of this begins. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest field. Now, the workers are there. The question is whether we're watching them, or watching for them, or inviting them, or forming them and releasing them. Now, don't forget, we've enjoyed having you on the Five Gifts podcast today. Please subscribe if this has been helpful to you. Share it with a friend. And also, go ahead and smash that like button like you're taking out a Nephilim giant. And you can connect with us at charlesrusselltraining.com, charlesrussellministries.com, or coachingcardia.com. If you'd like to take the next step in your leadership growth, then reach out to us. We'd love to help you personally. If you want support in building a leadership pipeline for your church organization, we can also help you do that as well. But until next time, we'll see you next week on the Five Gifts podcast. You've been listening to the Five Gifts podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.